Hello, friends. Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. Looks like I may have forgotten to attach this thing to Twitter. That's pretty funny.
That's okay. It's all bots.
The perfect encapsulation of off-season podcasting content. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined by Josh Bowe. We are editors over at MavsMoneyBall.com. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Nice little 10 o'clock live podcast recording in the off-season. No. I'm saying we won't get any more sicko than that right now, I think. So I think anyone listening live is the most true believer that there is.
Yeah, I really don't know. I must have messed up the Twitter posting when I was fooling around with stuff earlier today. But that's that. It's funny, like the listens and the views and that sort of stuff at this point in the off season are just like through the floor. And realistically, we keep posting and talking largely to like stay in habit, because I think if we didn't do it, we might just like never do it again.
That's fair.
Just sort of the way it goes sometimes. You know, we're really in the like dead of the off season. There's about, you know, the Eurobasket starts in 2 days, and we have nothing to cover from Eurobasket, which is depressing. And Team USA at the AmeriCup doesn't have any actual NBA players in it, so it's like there's just nothing. Now, there's some stuff we're going to talk about, because when you're really trolling the internet, you find a way to make it happen. But it did occur to me, this isn't an original thought by any stretch of the imagination, but before we kick off with some of the things that are in, you know, the title, it occurred to me just before the show started that PJ Washington is actually eligible for an extension soon. And yes. Like the max level. Hi, Huck. My dog is talking to me because he thinks I'm talking to him. I think he's eligible for like 4 years, $90 million. I don't entirely understand why he would sign an extension, but it seems to be the common theme that he's not only going to sign an extension. It's like it feels like it's sort of fairly likely. I don't know.
Mark Stein said he became, well, I mean, not Mark Stein didn't say this. I mean, he reported that, yeah, that it's likely, and it's he becomes extension eligible Friday. Yeah, 4 year deal, just shy of $90 million. League sources tell the Stein line that an extension for Washington is likely. The reason why he signs it is because, I mean, that's 4 years guaranteed money in a market, free agency market, that is not as bountiful as a lot of players would probably expect right now, considering how much money there is just in general. Like, free agency this year was pretty low key.
Yeah.
Especially for restricted free agency, although Washington's obviously not going through that anymore. But also, like, he kind of needs to lock in a deal because this upcoming season is so unpredictable.
Okay.
For the Mavericks. I mean, let's say he doesn't lock in a deal and then he's not starting, like, by December. What does his money look like after that if like, he isn't a locked-in starter because the Mavericks decide to start Cooper and AD? And then maybe they start Clay at the two, and then whoever the point guard is, and maybe PJ's coming off the bench. And
right.
I think he has to lock it in because this season is going to be so unpredictable that if something weird happens, like, where does his money go? Like, I think he needs to take the money now. And yeah. I don't know if he's going to get more of it on the open market, because I don't know how many minutes he's going to play. And that's not to say he's not important. Like, the Mavericks do need to re-sign him because he is a very good piece for them. It's more just his box score numbers might not be as impressive just because this roster is so unique, is the way I'll put it, that I don't, you know, the minutes and the production might take a haircut compared to where he was last year, for example. When, you know, he was the unquestioned starter at the four. Now you got Anthony Davis. Now you got Cooper Flagg. Like, it's going to be funky.
So this is fascinating to me because, so let's just kind of go through the timeline so I get this right. He was a restricted free agent, and they signed him, meaning the Charlotte Hornets signed him to a 4 year deal worth like $17 million a season? Like, it was like a $68 million deal. That seems about right, because he had entered the summer and you were the very first, like this emanated, like this started with Josh being like, why isn't somebody signing this guy to a deal? Because he's really good. And this was the year before the Mavericks ended up trading for him. And so they've had him, maybe it's like a 3-year deal worth, it was about 17, 18 million a year. I think I'm right. It doesn't really matter for the purposes of this argument. He's just, I think he's just kind of at the mercy of timing in a very large regard, because I think like of the Mavericks players not named Cooper Flagg, he is the one who has the most growth left to do in his game. Is that outrageous to say out loud?
I mean, he is 27.
Okay.
I mean,
he's gotten a little better every year.
Yeah,
I really like. I just like him. Like, there's somebody that I was on a show earlier in the week, guys. I'm so sorry, I can't remember the name of the show. And they asked me, like, would you, you know, what would you do about PJ? And I'm like, I would trade Anthony Davis and play PJ. Like, that's just kind of the and it's, I guess you're right. He's not that, you know, he's not young, but he's not old. He's not in his
no.
He's just kind of that perfect guy. And it feels like maybe the Mavericks have him a little bit over a barrel because he's not going to get, let's just say it's $22.5 million a season for like 4 years, $90 million. That's about what that averages out to. And I guess maybe it's just a good deal for everybody. I just really like him. Washington's just the kind of guy that we would complain about as recently as 2022 of not having anybody even remotely like that. It was like Dorian Finney-Smith was the closest thing Dallas had to a player like him. And I hope he stays. He's one of the players who, he frustrates me with some of the times he disappears, but he had a lot of, like, he was good last year.
No, yeah, he was good last year. I mean, he shot, his 3-point shot came around. He still shot well from three after the Luka trade, which is very encouraging as well.
Right.
Because, you know, Luka definitely masks a lot of the 3-point shooting. I still don't know if I trust his percentage enough to, well, I do trust his percentage, but on this team,
it might go back down in the like low 30s.
Yeah, like with who he's going to be surrounded with, he's not going to be like a floor spacer compared to where the spacing was pre-trade when they had a lot more 4-out, 5-out kind of basketball that they could play. But it's still good enough, and his defense, I mean, something I don't, you know, something that I don't know if we talked about a lot about the Luka trade, and I know people are like, oh my God, you're talking about the Luka trade, give it up. And I get it. This is more just like kind of an underrated aspect of last season in terms of like how it all went to hell. I mean, even regardless of the Luka trade, like all the injuries, you know, let's say they don't trade Luka, like Luka was still hurt, you know, past February when he was traded, and Lively got hurt. Like all those injuries, like PJ before everything went to hell, he was on track for, I think, like an all defense season. Like he was awesome last season until, you know, everything kind of fell apart. So he's a worthy piece. He fits what you want a modern NBA wing to do. You know, maybe you want a little bit more self-creation, but again, you can't get too picky, you know, because if he had a little bit more self-creation, we're talking about like an all-star, you know, third team, all NBA level kind of guy. Like if he could do everything he can do right now and also, you know, generate offense himself, like that's a lot. So the fact that he can kind of tick every other box, he can guard, you know, 2 through 5. He's a great, I think what he does best defensively to me is, I think, a really I don't know if it's underrated, but a really key aspect of like modern NBA defense right now. Like being able to be the help side shot rim protector, not the main rim protector, not your center rim protector, but being able to be the rim protector after your center has rotated. Like he is so great at that role. Like he is so great. And if your center steps up to guard the level of the screen, or if they get caught in a switch, or they have to guard in space a little bit to deter the pick and roll ball handler, the fact that like Washington is the guy that can rotate over and be your new rim protector when the ball kind of gets swung.
Yeah.
He was so good at that. Now, obviously the Mavericks they're going to play Anthony Davis and they're going to play another center. So there's less of a crucial need for that, but he's so, you know, he's so he has quick enough feet to where he can kind of rotate out to close out on three-point shooters and then also rotate back to the rim when your center is caught on an island or your center switches. Like, that's just that's a very valuable defensive trait to me. And yeah, I don't know where his future is. Like, I don't know, is he going to play if he does sign a four-year deal? Like, is he going to play all 4 years with the Mavericks? I don't know. You know, we'll see what happens. But you kind of got to lock him up also, because even if you want to trade him, he's more valuable on that deal to trade. Because
it does kick value. A particular, yeah. And like, that's what I actually find really fascinating about this is it's an extension. So it wouldn't kick in until the next year, meaning the Mavericks are kind of hovering right next to that second apron. And that would mean next year they would have to figure something out, or they're living over the apron. And that's just, it's a team building is like this now. You have to think like an accountant, but it's I don't know. It's something to keep an eye on. I'm glad that it's trending in that direction, because he's somebody I've enjoyed watching. We actually talked about that more than I meant for us to, but he's a he's just a fascinating part of the team. Well, by the title stretch, you can kind of tell a few things. Josh and I, like, I've just been kind of a whirlwind. I'm not really prepared for this podcast. You guys will follow. I'm sorry about that. But
how's your fantasy team?
Oh, it was okay. We had a Mavs Moneyball fantasy draft right before this, and we had fun. It's only like 10 people, so we made a bunch of stupid rules, and it's just silly. So it'll be a good time. So as we saw from like the Mavericks social media, the guys are kind of like, the guys who don't live here full time are sort of trickling back in doing workouts. We saw Anthony Davis without any eye protection, which is good, in practice gear. The Mavs social media stuff is like starting to tick up a little bit. Now here's something that just killed me. Like, this is very funny. I did a video up on this. It's going to be going up for the offsides, group that I'm working with now, tomorrow, but on Friday, Stephen A. Smith did a top five players in the NBA to watch. Not like your best five or anything like that. Just top five players to watch. And the Mavs ended up using this for their own social media on TikTok. At least that's what somebody told me. I tried to look into it on TikTok, but I couldn't actually find it. So maybe this is incorrect. But the number five player that Stephen A. Smith led off his countdown with was Kyrie Irving. Just like, it's a top five players to watch list, and you selected somebody who is in, like, there's a reasonable to strong likelihood he doesn't play a minute. Now, he goes on to couch it and say he was under the impression that Kyrie's missing half the season, which is, that's where Nico's nonsense from Summer League, it's just like, it's putting out mixed signals into the world, and it's doing exactly what I don't want with this team, which is, I want expectations to be reasonable. Like, I want them to fire Nico as much as the next guy, but I'm not going to sit here and talk about it forever, because I don't think they're actually going to do it. But if Nico's going to continually insist that this team is like an honest to God title contender right now, then he's going to be running into a reality-based brick wall very quickly. Because that was number five. That was very funny. So then he goes on and he lists other players, and it's kind of the guy, I can't remember. Luka was number two. Kevin Durant number three, and then there's somebody else number four, I don't remember. But number one was a good one. Like, this is good television, good talk radio, good podcasts, adjacent content. He talked about Anthony Davis, and he talked about how he said Anthony Davis is a walking 28-12, which, no, he's not. And then proceeds to talk about how he's always injured and knows that he's always injured, and then ends with if both of these players are healthy, the Dallas Mavericks are going to go to and win the NBA Finals. Like, it was the weirdest, funniest mid-August segment of television that I've seen in some time.
Did an agent text him or something? Like, what?
No clue. It, like, the other three people on the show.
Like, where did that come from? Like, where does this come from?
It was because it's like, he won't be held to it. He'll probably change his mind four times. That's fine. Well, yeah. Television works. But the other people on the broadcast were like, what are you talking about? Now, they didn't outright say anything specific about Kyrie or Anthony Davis' encounter to him. But it's like, I just sort of wonder, like, are the Mavericks really building up this expectation that they're going to be quite good. Like, if you think they're going to be passable and win games, I'm not here to argue with you. I set my floor at 40 games and their ceiling at 45 games. Like, what? Like, we're not. It's just, it was a really funny segment. And it's, it got me just thinking that, like, as we get closer to the real season, which is, two full months away, I'm just going to be very interested to watch where the national conversation on this team goes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure. And I mean, I guess it, not to defend Stephen A, but I guess he picked Kyrie because if Kyrie somehow, he's a player to watch in the sense that if there's some kind of miracle in the sense that he comes back and he looks like Kyrie, like faster than expected, then that kind of changes the trajectory of at least this season.
Yeah.
So, I'll couch it with that. And then obviously Anthony Davis, he has to stay healthy. He stayed healthy for about two seasons, the two seasons before he came here with LA. Those were like the two healthiest seasons he'd played in a long time. And then he comes here and he's hurt. He didn't get the off-season surgery that we thought he was going to get. He did get off-season surgery, but it was for his eye.
Different thing.
Not to fix the abdominal issue. So you hope that that's not something that comes back again. But yeah, it goes to show how weird this roster is, because objectively, undeniably, you just look at every name and you're like, oh, that's a good player. Oh, that's a good player. Oh, that's a good player. And it's not until you kind of put them all together on the same page that you're kind of like, which means there's a part of it where if they're healthy, if Anthony Davis plays 65 to 70 games, there's only a limit on how bad they could be, even if you're someone who thinks that this roster is poorly put together and doesn't fit and, they don't have enough shooting and they don't have enough. Even if you think all that stuff, as much as you believe you could believe in the take is that they could only be so bad because the talent is so high that if these guys just stay on the floor, like, they're going to win. They're going to go they're going to kill every under 500 team. Just because the talent is so good, even if the scheme is off or the offense looks bad or there isn't enough creation, like, it doesn't matter because, like, they're going to walk into the gym with like five of the top seven players in a lot of games they play, especially against the bad teams. And sometimes that's all you need in the regular season where teams aren't practicing and they aren't scheming super hard because the season's so long and there's not enough time to prepare and scout and practice and do all that stuff. Sometimes you're literally just trying to get to the game and stay healthy and you just roll out and you run your vanilla stuff. And that's kind of it. But also, like, and we've talked about it, we know the other side of the coin. Like, Anthony Davis can play 40 games and Kyrie comes back or doesn't come back at all, or they decide it's not worth it, or he comes back in March and he's really slow and it could be bad. But it's just weird because you just look at the roster and you're like, there's a lot of good players on the roster. You can't deny that. Like, Anthony Davis, Cooper Flagg, Derek Lively, Daniel Gafford, PJ Washington, Najee Marshall. There's just a lot of guys on this team. So it's weird. That's, I can't wait for the season to start because I think I've made this point about 85 billion times.
It's a good one. And it's worth remaking because you never really know who's paying attention and who's not. Like, Mavs content creator Slightly Biased tweeted today. It's like, I just keep looking at this roster, something to the effect of like, I just keep looking at the roster and this roster is really good or really talented or something to that regard. And yes, that's one thing you're not going to hear me say is that I think the team has bad players. My argument for if the Mavericks aren't great is that the players don't fit. They just, and that we'll see. We're going to see. It's worth repeating because I'm sure people aren't listening as much, but it's like they're going to start the season good. They're going to look good. And we're going to have a lot of are the Mavs real contenders conversations while the team scores 90 points and holds teams to 85 points. Also, sorry, I keep laughing because my two dogs who haven't like played in like 3 weeks because it's 1,000 degrees outside have decided that playing right out in front of like the other side of my computer is a great time to play.
I haven't heard them bark during a podcast. That's good
because they are going nuts. And I'm just like, what is happening?
That's funny.
It's very fun. No, Mary, it's fine. No, Josh says we can't hear them.
No, no, I can hear them. I meant like it's been a while since I could hear them. Since you
heard them.
Okay. Yeah, like they haven't done that a while, but it's fine.
Well,
fine.
Let's take a we'll take a quick break here, and then we'll finish up with something else that came up that I did last week, and then we'll each talk about a guy, even though I really forgot to pick one this week. So we'll insert some ads and be right back. Okay, Mark Cuban, the content man. He is going on the DLLS show a little bit later in the week, and it's like, look, it's respectful, but I get a kick out of how they're like, minority governor Mark Cuban is, and I'm like, he's the season ticket holder. He is an extraordinarily expensive season ticket holder. Now he has stories. And that's really part of his appeal. And he's been going on other podcasts, not basketball ones, but he's told some stories in the past several weeks. And one of the things that came up was this story, like, and we'll just, you know, go ahead and just go in reverse order here. He says that the Mavericks had a deal in place for Kobe Bryant. And
he's told this story like a billion times.
He's told it like a million times. And I forget it every time because I'm like, it's just so implausible. To me, because we never heard anything from the Lakers side of this, and that's pretty important. But then what I did is I have a video coming out that came out earlier last week about like kind of the top five trades that almost happened or moves that almost happened under Cuban. And the Shaq one is probably the one that makes me laugh the most because Cuban and Shaq talk about this openly. Like Shaq was really trying to work his way here, and it just did not work out. And I guess I had sort of forgotten because, like, the Mavericks of the Dirk's early years, Shaq was just the boogeyman. Like, the entire roster was built around Shaq containment, and it didn't work because Shaq was, like, the force.
Yep.
It's just, it's funny to think about that Shaq really was, and we're talking, like, late-stage Shaq, who is a different player, but still quite awesome, obviously. But it's just that one's the one that really sticks with me, and then there's also the Paul Pierce one. I'd forgotten that one entirely when I started digging around that Paul Pierce almost made his way here.
Well, that's kind of funny because he was the guy everyone wanted the Mavericks. Not everyone, but
yeah.
He was the guy everyone wanted the
Mavericks. Yeah. It was all sorts of people. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they wanted, yeah.
That's really something.
So,
yeah. I don't know. It's a, you know, the one part that's like Mark drives me nuts. Everybody knows this. But I do have to give him some credit where it's like they really did seem to always try to be finding ways to make the team better from like 2001 until
after the title,
And then yeah. They were just over their skis because Cuban clearly there's a misreading of the CBA. And we know that now, like they thought that free agency was a path, but it's, you know, we've had 12 years to look back, 14 years, whatever it is. And we just know that now it wasn't. Free agency was never going to be the thing. That's fascinating. I don't know. It was fun to look back on a little bit. Mark's always good for some content. I'm interested to see what he says when he goes in the DLLS show because, as we know, he like very much came out and against the Luka trade and sort of tried to distance himself from everything. And then when they got flagged, he was like, "Hey guys, loved you the whole time." And
yeah,
that sort of stuff just drives me.
Yeah. The Kobe story is fun, though, because it's, like, the one mega trade that, like, does kind of feel plausible in the sense that, like, I could imagine Kobe being cool with it because he seemed to, like, out of all of the regardless of how you feel about Kobe and his standing in history, he's obviously still one of the greatest NBA players of all time. Mm-hmm. Like, doesn't matter, even if you don't think he's as good as Tim Duncan or whatever on your list, he's still on like that. He's still pretty high up on an all-time list, regardless of what you think of him. And I would say of a lot of those guys in that tier that Kobe reached, he probably had at least publicly expressed like the most adulation and respect for Dirk. Like,
yeah, well, it's you know, the most trafficked story our site ever did was you sharing this aggregation of a Michael Jordan quote that contained Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah.
And it was a Jordan saying like, there's only four guys from this most recent era that I think could play in my era. And like one of them was Dirk.
Yeah.
And it says a lot that Kobe and Jordan really appreciated and valued what Dirk brought to the game and how he played the game. And that's something that's interesting to me. You know, it's like the CBS did a top, we'll probably, I need somebody from Mavs Moneyball to aggregate this, but it's like they did a top 25 players of the of this century, like for the NBA, and like Dirk came in at 10. Like, that's nuts. And I'm what it shows to me is, like, I've been very concerned about Dirk's legacy being one where he will not advocate for himself. And because he played such different stages in his game, I'd wonder if he sort of, if people wouldn't remember him. And that's just, I that's turning out not to be the case, which is, I think, great.
Yeah, that's great. And for me, I was also worried for the all the reasons you said. And then the other, because most of his best highlight, not best, but a lot of his best highlights were pre-HD. And yeah, I feel like those clips, you know, it's all about finding YouTube clips because that's how people remember guys that they didn't get to watch in real time, like younger people that missed the Dirk era. You try to find clips, and if you search for Dirk in YouTube, obviously you're going to get a lot of the title run, which is awesome. But you're going to get a lot of, like, 2013, 2014, 2015, when he was still a very good player. But, you know, like, the Dirk from, like, 2001 to 2000, basically 2001 to 2011, that 10-year stretch, he was, like, he was fucking killer. And, like, you're not going to see as many because, like, you know, it's in 4x3 standard def,
those great don't translate. So, man, when I was doing that Finley video, some of the Dirk Finley Nash stuff, like then Panda Hank has a ton of this stuff on his YouTube page. It's just great. It's great. And I wish they had upscaling ability to see, because it's just, man, some of the things we can see now and being able to see, you know, Dirk that way would have been amazing. So I decided who I want my guy to be. My guy Cowboy in the chat told me who it should be earlier. And if you didn't pick someone, I can remember this guy if you want to search, seek out your own.
I've got one, but you go first because you're ready.
Okay. So Cowboy, longtime friend of the chat, Brandon, is his real name. He comes on our live show a lot. Probably him and Doyle Rader are two most, like, been the Mavs fans the longest. Which I appreciate, though. And he suggested I do Dorian Finney-Smith, which I think is a great one because, you know, we just got done talking about...
That feels way too recent for
it does.
Remember Some Guys.
It does, but it's like, what I want to do is focus on the early stage Remember Some Guys element of his career here because, you know, the 2016 offseason was so fucking tragic. It was tragic. Because that was the year where everything really fell through hard, where they tried to sell, meaning like Mike Fisher. Mike, love you, guy. You're always nice to me. But the Mavericks sold you a bill of goods. That they were going to try to pair, what was the Miami center and Mike Connolly together?
Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah. And like, it was like, oh, that's going to be our big plan. Yay. I'm pretty sure it's 2016. I could be wrong. But the ultimate point is they ended up with Harrison freaking Barnes. And Harrison Barnes was coming off. Harrison Barnes was ultimately, like, if you go look at the box scores, if Harrison Barnes was able to hit the broadside of a barn, in just one of three contests, the Golden State Warriors don't drop a 3-1 lead to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Instead, he died, and they were happy to see him go. They did not want to bring him back. Now, Harrison's a guy who I will eventually remember fondly, but he was brought in to be a superstar, and he's not a star. And so the Mavericks, like, that was really when the crash started to happen. That year was brutal, 2016-2017, that season. However, that was also the year undrafted free agents galore joined the Dallas Mavericks. And one of those was a young man, a young forward by the name of Dorian Finney-Smith. And Dorian... I remember him clearly because that was the year that A.J. Hammonds was the second-round draft pick, right? There was Yogi Ferrell played a bunch of minutes on that team. There was Jared Uthoff. Do you remember that guy? Oh, my God. Talk about some Remember Some Guys, dudes. Nicholas Brusino. And there was just like this weird group of players because the Mavericks just had – like they had dart throws because they were bad. Pierre Jackson, dude, I forgot about that guy. Sorry, I'm just looking at the roster for the 2016-17 season. And Dorian came in, he couldn't shoot. And the promise was, we're going to teach this guy to shoot. And I remember thinking at the time, this is not happening. This is not happening. And for his rookie year, he played 81 games. as an undrafted free agent. That's how bad that Mavericks team was. 81 games, 20 minutes a game. He shot 37% from the floor, including under 30% from three. And you'd think that this guy was just the kind of a one-year thing and they'd move him along. And then he played next year with Dennis Smith. I remember him and Nicholas Brusino at Summer League with Dennis Smith Jr. And Brusino and Finney Smith could not hit any of the shots that Smith was feeding him. And once again, I'm thinking, okay, how is this guy hanging on? How is he hanging on? What is going on here? And then the Mavericks draft Luka Doncic. 2018-19 season. He is, he plays a bunch of minutes once again because he's just kind of an iron man. He didn't play very much. I don't remember him getting hurt in his second year, but he very clearly must have because he only plays 21 minutes that game. And so it's like something kind of triggers in the second half of, I think it was the second half of Luka's rookie year, maybe like the final 30 games, where he finally starts connecting on some three-point shots. And you're like, this is the guy. And he just sort of hung out. He was just with the Mavericks. He ended up being with them, from 2016 until the Mavericks traded him to Brooklyn for Kyrie Irving in 2023. And every year he got a little bit better. Every year the Mavericks asked a little bit more of him. The run to the Western Conference Finals was crazy because him and Reggie Bullock were absolutely ground to dust by their playoff minutes that year. Let me go see the totals because the playoff minutes that year were absolutely bananas to me. Yeah, 688 minutes. Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing that hard in it. But he's played 38.8 minutes a game in the playoffs. The Mavericks, just for an undrafted guy, it's just wild. Wild. He drove me nuts with what he couldn't do, and he drove me nuts with what the Mavericks asked him to do, and then he just wasn't able to do it. But I didn't properly appreciate him at all times, but I was glad to see a guy like that really grind for the contracts he's gotten. And, he'll be one of those guys we look back with fondness as the years get further and further away from him.
Yeah, I feel like he's the epitome of the previous regime, the regime that brought in Luka. He was like the epitome of that regime's team building philosophy of why pay more for more talented players when we can pay 25% of this player's contract and get 75% of the production, which makes a lot of sense on paper and can work, especially in the regular season. And especially when you have a guy like Luka, who can make everyone better. And then you get to the playoffs and you realize that missing 25% of production is actually worth that extra, 75% in money because the best players win in the NBA playoffs. Like there's just no parity, the parity. And when you get to the playoffs, like there's just not a lot of scrappy underdogs that win championships. Like we've said, no team, the last team to win a title that was not a three seed was the Rockets in the 90s, and then the only other time was the Celtics in the late 60s. Like, it just doesn't happen. And I felt like Dorian kind of became, and I don't want to say this is just like an online thing to me. Like everyone loved, every Mavericks fan loved him. So this is more of just me being like a weirdo, observer. Like, he kind of became the mascot of that team building philosophy. And that wasn't his fault. Like, he was great. And the reason why, the Mavericks leaned into that direction was because they hit on guys like Dorian, and guys like Dorian worked so hard to make it feel like that's a viable strategy. Like Dorian being as good as he was from really, undrafted to legitimate playoff starter. Like, yeah, of course the Mavs were like, wait a minute, like we can get this out of this kind of guy. Let's do this some more. And obviously I didn't agree with that team building strategy, but that you cannot deny the work that Dorian put in to turn himself into a more than viable player. And now he became a very viable trade commodity when the Lakers traded for him. And then of course he goes to the Lakers and he helps that team get a three seed. And now he's on the Rockets, right? He's on the Rockets now and back in Texas a little bit. So, and he's going to be awesome for that Houston team. So yeah,
the Houston team is stacked.
Yes, it is.
Let me see here. Delete. Delete for everyone. Sorry, I was inadvertently shared a bad link to something, to a chat, and I needed to get it fixed because it was a confusing post.
All right.
There we go. My brain is mashed potatoes. So who do you pick?
I will pick again from the mid-2000s era of Mavs basketball that, you know, that we remember so fondly. I will pick Antoine Jamison from the 2003-2004 squad. His only season in Dallas, one-hit wonder. They traded for him out of Golden State. He played all 82 games. Came off the bench when they traded for him. He was the anticipated starter. And then Don Nelson, and I guess with Cuban, got a little, they got a little, what do you call it? Lost in the sauce there. That's when they brought in, oh my God, who was the, I can't believe him, Antoine Walker. And he ended up starting, even though I think Jamison was the better player. But Jamison came off the bench and won Sixth Man of the Year. It's his, probably his, you know, he's only, his only accolades are really he made two All-Star teams and won Sixth Man of the Year. You can argue that's his, you know, one of his best accomplishments in terms of like individual awards. He was awesome. He was awesome for that one season. It drove me nuts in high school seeing him come off the bench and Antoine Walker shooting like 30% from the floor and shooting like 25 times. And then Jamison comes in, Walker hits the bench. And Jamison's shooting like 60% from the field, efficiently hitting jump hooks, running the floor in transition, hitting the occasional spot up three. He barely took any threes in Dallas, which is kind of funny because he took threes pretty much every other season of his career. Rebounded well. You know, he had about 6 rebounds a game in 29 minutes. He really felt like the missing piece because you remember they're coming off that 2003 season that they lose in the Western Conference Finals when Dirk gets hurt. And they got Dirk, they got Nash, they got Finley. You know, you could argue they needed a center, but they also needed one more perimeter wing. They had Finley and Nash in their backcourt. And they just, you remember that era, they just, until they got Josh Howard, they were just rolling through like small forwards and wings. You remember Adrian Griffin. I don't know if this was at that time. Like, remember, like, they had Greg Buck. Like, they just, I felt like, yeah,
guy.
Devin, remember Devin George as well, which I think he was later. I think he was for that 07 team. Like, it felt like they could just never find a small forward. And then they traded for Antoine Jamison. Career high 51 points. I think he scored during his first few years with the Warriors. Like, just an absolute bucket. Great size, 6'9". Can yep. play from the perimeter, had a really nice jump hook in the paint when he could post up smaller guys if they tried to guard him with a smaller guy, like a guard or something. Like, I was so ecstatic when they traded for him and thought this is the missing piece. It was exactly what they needed on that 03 team, aside from like a center. And then they fucked it up because they traded for Antoine Walker and they put Jameis on the bench. Like, I will go to my grave. Like, if they didn't trade for Antoine Walker that season, I think that 04 Mavs team goes to the finals. Like, I loved that team until they traded for Antoine Walker. And I feel like it kind of buried Jamison's. Yeah, and then Jamison gets traded after that year because that 04 team, I think, you know, they lost in the first round. Funny enough, that team set the all-time NBA record for best offensive rating that stood until... I think the Mavericks broke it in 2020 with Luka, or maybe it was broken, maybe one of the Warriors, Steph teams, I can't remember. And they ended up trading Jamison for Devin Harris and I think Jerry Stackhouse, which ended up being an awesome trade to get them back, you know.
Just get them back like into the title that one's picture. Actually, so it's like, it's fun to talk about Jamison because you can say that he maximized everything the Mavericks really asked of him. And then the Mavericks turned around and maximized Jamison in a way that, in terms of value, that trade might be one of the best ones outside of Dirk Nowitzki. Like,
you get the fifth overall pick in Jerry Stackhouse.
Cool. And the teams, like, the team needed that because Jameson was an atrocious defender.
Yeah, he wasn't that good.
So it's a fun one. I like that one a lot, actually.
And,
a
good one. And speaking of that trade, like, can you imagine, like, it was so crazy. Like, it's crazy to think back in Dirk's prime, they traded for the fifth overall pick. Like, could you imagine that? And it's the same regime for the most part, like, when Luka was, like, trading for a fifth overall pick and, like, Luka, like, and they just, it's just crazy to think about because it's like, that seems like a move that that front office would have never made, yet they made it in Dirk's prime, like, trading a talented player to get a really highly valued draft pick. Like, they just never did that again
Ever again.
Yeah.
Well, your basket starts soon, tomorrow, day after tomorrow. And I really, like, we may end up talking about that just because, even though it's not adjacent to anything we do, not anymore. But it's basketball. So if you can find a way to watch it, I really recommend it. It's very different from the NBA, but it's still basketball in a very different version. You got anything for you before we head out?
No, I'm good. Yeah, it's a bummer that Eurobasket is not relevant to us really this year because there's a lot of fun moments that perk up in that. But hey, we're getting, September's almost here, which means training camp's almost here. Yeah. So we're getting there.
We're inching there. I mean, I will say it's like it's a conflicting emotions thing because I obviously miss rooting and watching for Luka, but I also will not miss watching him and like in the back of my mind wondering, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, is he gonna get hurt? it's a fun thing.
Didn't he have an injury scare? And like his
he banged knees. I mean, it's basketball. Yeah. It's one of those. So
yeah,
it's fine there. But all right, Josh and I'll be back next week. Probably maybe Tuesday. I don't know because Labor Day is obviously Monday. So we'll see when we record. But you know, we're inching closer to the season. Thanks so much for still listening. And we appreciate you guys. Everybody, talk soon and go Mavs.